Today I'm in Guildford with my brother Ian, and it's a hot summer's day. So thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
And you have just fed me, so thank you for the food as well. And I now have tea, which is brilliant. So you do get the first question. When did we first meet?
I think when I came back along the road from the next door but one neighbours, while the midwife's Morris Minor was parked outside the house, and I was showing the baby.
And that was me a long time ago. And where was I born? Was it Lower Clapton's?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember that because we moved, didn't we?
Yes. Yes, we moved shortly afterwards. Because there weren't enough bedrooms.
I was only little.
Yeah, but you made a lot of noise.
Next question. Do you drink tea?
Very, very rarely. So right now I have a cup of free trade coffee. So I'm breaking the rules of this podcast already, and I'm probably going to break a few more a bit later on.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to drink. You don't have to drink tea. Only I'm supposed to be drinking tea. So no, that's fine. Lots of people have drunk coffee instead of tea at the podcasts. So you get option B on the questions. What cup of tea have you had to drink, even though you don't really like it?
I guess there have been two occasions. One more recently was in Korea, when I was taken to a banquet by some business, I can't remember whether they were our staff or somebody else's staff, but that was one occasion. The occasion when I actually drank tea for almost 8 weeks in a row, on work days at least, was a long time ago when I was working as a holiday job in the computer science department at Manchester University. And at 4 o'clock every afternoon, the whole of the academic staff plus the research assistant sort of people like me would all go down to have afternoon tea. And there was no coffee option. And I mitigated this a little bit by eating a Kit Kat with my tea every day, just to make it a little more palatable.
Mm. I did once get interviewed for a job at Imperial, where the lab had a common room with the most enormous teapot. I mean, it must have been a 20-cupper at least. And apparently they all sat round and drank tea. It helped, apparently. So, the main question, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Well, I would say that actually quite a large section of the church in Britain is sleepwalking over a cliff of its own making. The cliff of its own making is the complete failure to adjust at all to the changes in society and morality that have taken place since the 1960s in Britain. There are some quite visible things about that. One is the furore and controversy over same-sex marriage that's been going on for ages, and partially resolved by some denominations and not by others, messed about with by the state as well, in creating the civil partnerships and making them unequal. But the other area which is perhaps less visible is that so many fewer people are in what might be considered orthodox relationships. And those people feel quite excluded and judged by the attitude of the church and the obsession of the church with sexuality and sex. That really is a huge problem, and it's driven people away. Because they don't feel welcome, they feel that they're starting from a point where the people within the established group are judging them for being somehow dirty or sinful for something which is actually just quite a normal function, part of the way that human beings are programmed.
It's really interesting, because the question is not about church. The question is about Christianity. So would that be something where you think that Christians who are leaving the church are maintaining their faith in a way which is not associated with the church in those situations?
For some people, I guess they... My own experience is that I've maintained quite a lot of the morality that comes with from the Christian background, while rejecting pretty much all of the aspects of faith. I think there are other people there's quite a trend of people who create their own narrative about faith, spirituality, some kind of deity or deities. So I think that really it's hard to say that there's a group of people who would still call themselves Christians who are outside the church. I think that's quite unlikely. I certainly haven't met very many.
Okay. I've just thought of a question that I didn't put on your sheet.
You're welcome to ask it.
It was about Sunday Assembly.
Right.
And just because you went along to Sunday Assembly for a while, but did you stop?
The attempt to create Sunday Assembly in Guildford never really... gained critical mass. It wasn't fun, which I think the larger ones are, and that's part of the attraction. But to make that happen, you've got to have a certain number of people, and we never achieved more than about 20 people. So that didn't really work, and it's actually folded. A lot of the people who were involved in that are still quite good friends, and they meet up and go on country walks together and things like that. But the actual Sunday Assembly meetings don't happen anymore. Another issue, I think, is that the Sunday Assembly formula is quite rigid and not necessarily appropriate to a smaller group of people. But they won't accept anybody using the name unless they follow the formula. So the Guildford group tried to do that, and it just didn't really work.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't had time really to follow up the Sunday Assembly leads that I was going to try to follow on my sabbatical. I think it's interesting. I might try and follow them at another time. So you get the same question that I asked Louise, but you may well have a different opinion. So do you think that Christianity has had a positive or negative effect on our wider family over the years?
I don't feel terribly qualified to answer the question about wider family. Mm-hmm. I think I can probably answer it for myself and my immediate family. Mm-hmm. So for myself, it's been mixed. I certainly got a good deal of support during my teenage years from church youth leaders and people I knew from the Easney College who were living just opposite to us. And they did a degree of patching up the holes in my parenting. So that I would say was positive. However, looking back on life from the perspective of a bit of distance, I would say that my faith at the time led me into some really bad life decisions. I married the wrong person for the wrong reasons. I stayed in that marriage even when it was very unhappy, and it would have been better for everybody involved, including the children, if I'd left much sooner. I felt a great deal of guilt and grief about the failure of that, which probably wasn't appropriate because I had tried really hard. I'd given it my best shot and still came out of it feeling very unhappy, maybe even a little bit bitter about the way in which the church had tried to keep us stuck together when we were repelling each other. And so that was really, really negative. And I would say, looking back, that I wasted quite a lot of my life because of those decisions.
I wonder if you would have got the same pressure from a different type of church. I don't know. Part of this journey for me has been very interesting about people who came up through a very evangelical tradition, and some of them have rejected that entirely, and some of them have moved into a more liberal tradition, which somebody actually just described as growing up to me, really. I don't know how that might have been different.
Am I allowed to ask you questions?
You can try, I might edit them out.
Have you ever counselled a couple to separate?
Yes. Yeah. I had someone who contacted me very recently, who is actually a friend of mine, he's not one of my parishioners, and he said to me, you need to tell me what you think about divorce. And I just messaged him back and said, sometimes it's not avoidable. But there have been people in my parishes some time ago where I have said, you know, this has to end.
Okay.
But two of the priests in our team are divorced. So I think we maybe come to it from a different perspective from some churches.
Right. Okay, that's interesting.
Maybe it's because I sometimes think our parents should have divorced 10 years earlier.
Yes. I find myself seeing a great many similarities in my path with my father. Mm. And it was only when I reached the same sort of age where our parents separated that I understood a bit better what had been going on. And felt able to, I don't think forgive is quite the right word, but to accept that some of the things and the way that he's behaved were not really in his control, and that he had done his best in the situation. You might have a different perspective on that.
I'm not sure that he necessarily did his best, but I think that they shouldn't have got married in the first place. But when I told him that, he wasn't very happy about it. I think for all the complex reasons that neither of them were in the right place to go into the marriage when they did. And it just became worse and worse.
Well, I would argue that this is another of the things where the church misdirects people, in that I think marriage is always a mistake.
I'm not going to agree with you there. And not only down the church line. Not only because I just don't see that in the same way.
I think it sets people up to fail. Because basically I don't think that humans are programmed to be monogamous. If you set people with the expectation that that one other person is going to be what they need for the next 50, 60 years of their life, that I just think you're setting them up to fail. And unless the concept of marriage can encompass some more degree of flexibility than it currently does, unless it could be morphed to do that, then I think it's a broken concept.
That's really interesting, because that's certainly not where I am. It's not where the church is. I'm not sure it's really where wider society is at the moment either. But then we probably have different perceptions, because we probably see different groups of people.
Right.
So I see people who are entirely expecting that to be the case when they get married. Most of the people still are married. Whether they'll still be married in 40 years, I guess, is another question. I'm going to go on to the next question about technology.
Okay.
What changes do you think technology is going to bring to society in the next 10 years, and are we ready for them?
There are two things that... One is already a problem that we have now, and it's going to get worse. And that is the explosion in social media has caused a huge erosion in people's rational understanding of the truth. That it's possible now to put forward the most ridiculous ideas and get them publicised and believed by people, because they don't have the necessary degree of scepticism, the necessary level of scientific education, the necessary level of political nous to be able to know what's true and what's not. And that bodes very badly for the future of democracy and society, where those ideas don't reflect reality anymore.
So about 5 or 6 years ago, when my children were at primary school, they were taught at primary school that they shouldn't trust what they read on the internet, but they should trust what they read in books. And I was really cross about that, because I'm like, you can't trust something because it's printed. You have to question everything. You have to question the validity of your books as much as the internet. You have to have the same measure of what you're reading on the internet as you do with written stuff, because I thought that was not appropriate.
The key difference is that when a book is printed, every copy is the same, and the content doesn't morph. But that is not true of what's published on the internet. Somebody can publish something today and claim that they never said it in a week's time. And that lack of the audit trail is really, really dangerous. So that's point one. The second thing, which is going to make a huge difference, is that retail is going away. And I would anticipate that in 5 to 10 years' time, there will be very few stores that you would actually go to and take something away from. Companies will pay to essentially exhibit the items that you can buy online so that people can go and look at them and decide which one they want. But you won't take anything away from the store, or you'll have it delivered to you. I think the only exceptions are likely to be food and clothes. I think everything else from the high street will go. And that is going to create a huge economic problem, because it will move jobs from shops to warehouses and transport companies, and it will remove one of the few remaining relatively low-skilled jobs that's available in the British economy. And that's going to have a big social impact.
I've been listening to Radio 4 on my travels, and one of the things which I thought was quite interesting is that John Lewis is doing okay and the others are not, of those sort of department store things. But John Lewis has always been very good at the online. And I would speculate that sometimes people go to John Lewis to look and then go home and order.
Yes, but they will only order from John Lewis if John Lewis's price is still the best.
Yes.
So a lot of shops have had the problem that people go there, decide what they want, and then go and order the identical item from an internet
delivery. With lower overheads.
Yeah. And no, we're not ready for that. Overall, our economy is not ready for the disappearance of more low-skilled jobs. And that is what's going to happen.
We need another podcast to discuss universal income.
Okay.
At some point. Because, I mean, I think that's where... That's one of the things. And there's been a trial, and I understand it hasn't gone brilliantly well. Some point when I have an extra 25 hours, I have 25 hours in a day, I'll get onto that. So the roundup question is, what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
Well, that's got to be Tate.
Ah, yes.
Who I thought might well not get to 18 and has now turned into a very interesting, mature adult, and one who's in company and whose art I enjoy. So that's been a great pleasure to me.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you very much for speaking to me today. You're supposed to say, it's been a pleasure. Okay, we'll try that again.
I haven't read the script.
No, this
Karen is... often tells me I haven't read the script.
Okay. So, thank you very much for spending time with me today.
You're very welcome. I've enjoyed it.